Hi everybody. So, yeah, it's really nice to be here and talking to you guys. It's always really fun. It feels like, it's really like talking to a little family, you know, like it's not too scary because you all look nice. So, yeah, here we go. Cool. So, I wanted to talk about my GCSEs, which were like 10 years ago. And I still just about remember that experience. And when I was choosing my subjects, I was only allowed to choose one, like, subject that my parents didn't consider to be a real subject. Like, if it was up to me, I would have done, like, lots of, like, arty stuff. But my parents were like, no, you can have, like, one fun subject, and the rest need to be, like, gritty. So I chose drama. Drama, woo, yes, enthusiasm in the room, right? Drama was my thing. And I think at this point in my life, I still pretty much thought I was going to be like a movie star. Yes, so much enthusiasm. And if I wasn't going to be a movie star, then I was like going to be a drama teacher, which my year 10 work experience really knocked that out of me because it was terrible. Being a drama teacher is not fun. But, you know, I went to do my GCSE and I was enthused and I think I did pretty well. You know, I was doing pretty well in my coursework and I was like, yes, that dream of being a movie star is still on track. And So we had loads of coursework throughout the 2 years that I was doing it, and then it gets to the end, and we have our final exam, and it's a performance exam, so we have to perform a piece. And it was worth 50% of our grade. So 50% was all the other work that I'd done myself, and then 50% was this group piece, and we would be marked as a group. Not good. Now, for context, the rest of my drama group, were not as committed to the drama as I was. A lot of them agreed with my parents that it wasn't really a real subject, and they kind of thought that they would get away with messing around a lot. So those in my group, there were only 8 of us in the class, so we did this little performance together. And most of them were pretty clear that they didn't really care about this performance piece. One of them didn't come to rehearsals at all because he said he just didn't care about it, and 2 of them got kicked out off of the course before the performance even happened because of other ridiculous things they did. Someone came under the influence of some substances to the exam, and it really couldn't have been worse. I think it could not have been a worse experience, that particular performance exam. And like, I did my best to hold it together, but it wasn't an absolute nightmare. My teacher had to play 2 roles of people who couldn't perform, and someone came out of character during it and just started pleading with the examiner to like be kind to us because of how bad it was. I mean, it really was terrible. So as you can imagine, our group grade was not a good one. We were given an E for that piece, which was bad. And obviously all my good work, that was 50% of my grade, so it dragged my grade right down. And I was not particularly happy. And I felt very unjustly treated by this situation because I had done my very, very best and everyone else had not done their best and I was given the same grade. So we have in our story today another group of people who all received the same reward for very different amounts of work. It's a different situation, of course, but you know, we have me thinking that I had worked hard in my drama coursework and had not received any reward for that because of my team who did not care. And then in our story, we have these workers in the vineyard who have a very clear idea of how their payment should work. They believe that they should be compensated directly for the work that they did and have a fair reflection of the amount of labor that they put in. And a lot of us probably think they have a point in the story. I'm sure if we were in that situation, we would also be mad. And definitely in our kind of modern capitalist society, this is how it works, right? Like, we expect to be compensated for the work that we do. I'm sure most of us have had a job at some point in our life where we worked by the hour. I definitely have. And I would have expected to receive more than people who worked less hours than me. You know, that's what we expect. That's what our economy is like. But obviously in the story, Jesus isn't talking about our economy. He's talking about his economy, right? He's talking about the way that Jesus works, the way that Jesus responds to his people. And the labourers in the story, they don't get paid based on what they deserve, but they get paid based on the grace and the generosity of the landowner and the needs of them, right? The landowner gives them all the money that they need, a fair wage so that they can go away and buy their dinner and pay their rent or however it worked in those days. They all get what they need. They don't necessarily get what they feel that they deserve. So, Jesus tells this story and represents us as these laborers, okay? There's always a little meaning in Jesus' parables, obviously. He represents us as the laborers, and we might think of God as the landowner. All those who accept Jesus, who come into his vineyard as such, who come to work with him, to come and live the life with Jesus, we receive that same reward of eternal life, right? Jesus' reward to us of that life lived forever with him in heaven. That is for everyone who comes to Jesus, regardless of if you are a fervent server of Jesus for 100 years or not so much and maybe come to Jesus a lot later. So when we hear a parable, we always want to cast ourselves in the parable. I definitely do. Like, we listen to the parable and we're like, right, who am I in this story? Where can I fit myself in? And definitely as a young person, when I was hearing this story, when I was like a teenager, I was like convinced, and I still am a bit when I hear it, I was like convinced that I was one of those people who came at the very beginning. You know, I'd listen to the story and I'd be like, yeah, look at Laura, like laborer who arrived right at the beginning, working hard. You know, that's how I would feel about myself, because obviously I'm very modest. You know, and I would kind of think of it in that kind of time, very specific time-based idea, right? You know, I became a Christian very young. I've always kind of thought of myself as a Christian. I've always known that Jesus is with me. And so I'm like, right, yes, I came at the beginning, and I'm working for Jesus, and I am one of those people, right? And then I imagine the people who come later in the story, those people who come at like 5 o'clock and work for an hour, I imagine them as some like deathbed conversion stories, you know, people who like live a life of debauchery and then finally come to Jesus at the end. And I'm like, that's a really nice story for those people, you know, great for those people, great for those reformed serial killers and drug dealers that you imagine or that I definitely imagine, you know. It's great for them, cool story, but it's not really much to do with me. Like, all that I learn from this is that, yeah, they get the same as me, and that's fine. I mean, it doesn't really feel completely fair. It kind of feels like me getting the same grade as the guy who came in drunk to my drama exam. But, you know, it's cool, and it's a nice story for those people. And maybe some of other people in the room feel this way, right? Maybe some of us also hear that story and think, yeah, I've been here from the beginning, I'm a top laborer, and this is a nice story for other people, but it's not super important for me. But there will be other people in the room who will certainly be casting themselves in the role of someone who came on a bit later. There'll be people in the space who are thinking, yeah, okay, I know that I came to Jesus's life later, or I haven't always been with Jesus in my life. Maybe I've been coming and going. And know that they're casting themselves. Some of us are casting ourselves in that place. And maybe having periods of your life in the past that you feel shame about. You might think that maybe you're one of those people who came in the middle, you know, came around noon. You're like, yeah, I've done okay. I got there in the end. Maybe you're thinking you're someone who came a lot later. And it might be that people here feel that some shame of their past is weighing them down. And actually, they struggle to believe the story. While some of us might be saying, yeah, this is a story for somebody else, some of us might be thinking, actually, I don't think that this can possibly be a story for me because I don't believe that I deserve the same as someone who's been laboring longer. But I would say the joy of this parable is that it is never, none of us are thinking this is not good news for me. Well, maybe we are, but we shouldn't be. This is good news for all of us. This is good news for those of us who have been like the best Christians, and by the way, that's not me, but those of us who have been awesome Christians and like totally done our best for Jesus our entire lives. This is good news for you, and it's also good news for those people who know that they have real periods of shame. And I'm sure all of us have parts of our lives that we feel ashamed about. So it's good news for everyone. We are all recipients of the generous love of Jesus, the grace of Jesus, which we know not one of us could earn. The Bible is really clear that there isn't a single one of us who can earn what in the story is just a denarius, but what is in real life just true, amazing, eternal life with Jesus, right? We can't earn that, even if we have been awesome Christians our entire life. Even if we became a Christian as a child and we never lost faith and we worked hard every day for Jesus, it doesn't mean that we can earn that prize that is freely given by Jesus. I might have been a Christian my whole life, but I'm not going to say that I've always done exactly what Jesus wants from me, obviously. Even if I did come into the Vineyard first thing, I'm sure I spent a fair bit of time like staring at my phone and like chatting to the other workers and popping out for a Starbucks and like, you know, I wasn't always the best worker and I can hold my hands up and say that. So if you think of yourself as one first through the door, it's still important to remember that none of us live up to those standards that Jesus set for us. Without knowing that Jesus gives everyone the same treatment, none of us would be in the clear. And hopefully we feel kind of aware of that. We can't be living up to Jesus because he is perfect and we are not. And so what about those of us who cast ourselves as the latecomers? And perhaps you've realized by now that to a certain extent that's kind of all of us. We know that none of us are the perfect worker for Jesus, but what of those who really understand immediately and feel in this time, yeah, we've messed up, you know? Surely none of us can truly deserve what Jesus has for us, but even if none of us can deserve, maybe you're thinking, okay, yeah, none of you deserve it, but I really don't deserve it. You know, we're always going to put ourselves on some kind of scale. Maybe some of us feel as though our sin and the mistakes we've made before God are pretty terrible, and we can't possibly be heading for the same reward as some of the kind of top Christians that you see around. You know, you might be thinking, okay, sure, yeah, I can't live up to Jesus, but I can't even live up to the vicar or like the person sitting next to me, you know. You might just think, how could I be the same as everybody else? To which I want to remind you that not only did Jesus say that those of us who have messed up big time get the same reward as the what look like better Christians, but can I just make it clear again, there is no such thing as a good Christian. Like, we're all doing our best here. But even though Jesus says we all get the same reward, he also specifically, throughout the gospel, singles out those sinners, right? The people who were seen in that society as living a life that was defined by sin. People who really had messed up. You know, those people, Jesus is constantly actually singling them out, not just saying, yeah, we all get the same, but specifically pointing at those people and saying, I have something great for you. And we hear at the end of our passage today, the first will be last and the last will be first. People who've always been considered or considered themselves last have a really important and special place in the kingdom of Jesus. There is a really special place in Jesus's heart for those of us who have struggled with sin. And even if we're in the midst of that struggle, even if we know we haven't defeated the sin in our lives, which of course we haven't, even if you know that you keep going back to that thing that you know is bad for you and that Jesus isn't happy about, there's still heart for you from Jesus. Jesus doesn't wait until we've sorted that and gotten ourselves firmly through the door of the Vineyard and we're working hard and then he's like, okay, now you're all right, now you're my friends. It's not how it works. There's always heart for Jesus. He always invites us in through the door. The doors are always open to that Vineyard, even late in the day, even at 5 to 6, if you just run in, it's still open. So my desire when I was writing the sermon was to quote this book to you, which is called Gentle and Lowly. And I apologize if this has been quoted at you before, because I know a bunch of the staff team all read it at the same time. And it is a good book, and I'm going to kind of quote it to you, but it is slightly paraphrased because there's like quite a lot of long Christian words in this book and also quite a lot of Americanisms. Like some stuff that I was reading that I was like, this is definitely an American book. So it's going to be slightly paraphrased, but I want to give you an idea of what this guy is saying because he says this better than I could. Yes, this is a quote slightly edited from this book. He writes that God is rich in mercy, and that means that the things that make you feel the most shame make God hold on to you the hardest. It means that his mercy is not calculating and cautious like ours is, but it's unrestrained and flood-like. So it means that our shame, our haunting shame, is not a problem for God, but it actually is the thing that he loves to work with. It means that our sin doesn't cause his love to take a hit, but our sin causes his love to surge even more. Okay, so what our friend Dane Ortlund is trying to get at is that we might think that God kind of like deals with our bad stuff in our lives, our sins, but kind of looks at it with a bit of horror and is like, I don't really want to deal with this, but I'm going to because I love you. But actually, God isn't afraid of embracing us even in our difficult times. God is, that's his, like, his whole desire is to work with our sin. And so if you actually do think that you are like just the most terrible person, which I'm sure you're not, but if that is what you think, then that is okay, because Jesus is still keen to come and clean that up and work with it. That's what he wants to do. He wants to hold you harder even when you're feeling in the most difficult place. There is no limit to the forgiving power of Jesus or to the generosity that he has. He wants all of us to be with him in eternal life. That's what he wants because he loves us. He is giving that, in the story it's a denarius, a little coin. He's giving that out freely to everybody. He wants us all to come and claim it, regardless of who we are or where we come from or what we've done. His grace is sufficient for all of us, and the reward is big. So it's not like that drama exam of mine where we all showed up, we all did differently, we all did badly, and I'm including myself in that. I'm not saying my performance was like Kate Winslet. We all did bad, and we all got an E, right? And not all of us deserved that E, but we definitely didn't all deserve an A+. This is like if we all showed up to the exam and we all did pretty badly, but Jesus like jumped in, did the performance, did awesome, and then we all got an A. Okay, except better than an A, like a lot better than an A. Hopefully this is making sense. But, you know, you have to see how little we've earned his grace. You know, we've earned his grace just as much as someone who shows up to the drama exam and just doesn't really get involved and keeps coming out of character to just beg for forgiveness. But we still receive so much more of that grace than we can imagine. So what I don't want is anyone going away from this sermon and feeling really bad about themselves. Like, I never want that. I don't want someone who came in here and being like, yeah, I was one of those first workers, to leave like, oh my goodness, I'm the worst. Because you're not. You're great. And you know, God sees you as wonderful, right? Like, that's a fact that we know. God sees us as so wonderful that he wants to spend eternity with us, and he chose to die for us. Each individually, not just as together they've got some good qualities. Like, each of us individually he chose to die for. So we know that he sees us as wonderful even when we're at our worst. But there is still a call to come to the vineyard and do the work, right? Like, we have a call to let Jesus into our hearts and to do the best we can for him, even though we know that however much work we put in, we're getting the reward. But it's about more than just that. It's about more than saying, oh, well, I can just rely on that. We know that there is something that we're called to do in there. And it can be perfectly legitimate to want to wonder why that is, you know. It might be quite easy for us to think, well, we can never be perfectly Christ-like. We're always going to mess up. We are human. Jesus is forgiving. So maybe we don't have to worry too much about, like, working too hard right now, you know? And I get that. I've wondered that in the past, you know, and Jesus is so forgiving. Maybe we can just rely on that a little bit and have our kind of fun, you know? Maybe that would be fine. But I'm guessing we know from the fact that we've come to church today that that's not the way. We know that there is something that's expected of us. We know that we've come here because we have a commitment to Jesus in some form in this world. So I want to just offer a couple of reasons and thoughts about what it means to be Jesus's workers now, rather than just relying on that expectation of life in heaven. Firstly, when we see the beautiful gift of that grace that Jesus is offering us, we feel a desire to follow him, right? We feel like we want to respond to that love in love because we're grateful. Example, I really want a tattoo. In fact, I want several tattoos. I have this vision of myself having loads. I would just love to get lots of tattoos. And there's a few reasons I'm yet to actually do this, but I think, honestly, a major one is that I know my mum will not be happy, right? And, like, my mum is like, you're a grown-up, do what you want, and she doesn't, like, think it's, like a sinful thing to get tattoos, and she's fine with me, like, you know, doing my thing. However, she just doesn't like them, and I know she wouldn't be particularly happy if I got a tattoo or several tattoos. And in the end of the day, even though she's not like the boss of me anymore, I really love my mum, and I know, because I love her and she's been so amazing to me, I know that I don't feel particularly good about doing something that she won't like. It doesn't really feel like the right response to the love and trust she's given me. So not to say that I'm never going to do it, and I feel like now I've mentioned this in front of all of you, when I do get a tattoo, everyone's going to be like, I can't believe you do this to your mum. But I'm just saying, you know, when you love someone, you feel like you want to make them happy. And I feel like I want to do things that my mum is going to love rather than things that she's not going to like. Same with Jesus, right? I'm sure we all know what it means, I definitely do, to have that niggling voice in your head that's like, Jesus, really what you want to do? Like, do you really want to be this way? Do you really want to do this thing or think this or say this? Don't you know that the one who loves you isn't going to be particularly impressed with this? You know, and again, not to say that he isn't going to be really happy to come and work on it with you, but it doesn't. He still wants us to try and live in a better way. And I don't always listen to that feeling until it's too late, right? Like, of course. And I am working on trying to make better decisions because I want to respond with love to the love that I've received from Jesus. And the love that I feel towards Jesus. I know that there is joy to be found right now in life by living for Jesus and choosing to lean into his presence rather than trying to pull away from it. Because that presence and guidance and support that Jesus offers to our lives is truly awesome. And this story is about so much more than just life in heaven, right? Jesus offers us a taste of that reward now, when we choose to walk with him rather than away from him. And the other reason we follow Jesus in this life is we do it for others. We have a responsibility to take the generosity of Jesus, which has filled us up, and to show it to others, to send it out, to become part of Jesus's mission to bring a little of that reward in heaven to earth, right? We know that Jesus calls us constantly through the gospel. Throughout the Bible, it just says, love others, love your neighbors. And we want to follow that. And we know how good it is when someone treats you with love and compassion, right? When someone just cares for you. We know that that is amazing. And we know that it's good to care for others too. We feel that when we love others, we feel that it is a good thing. That's what we're made for, connection with God and connection with each other. So this does not mean that it is always going to be really easy, that we'll walk with Jesus, it'll be easy, we'll never be tempted, we'll never experience unfair things, we'll always love others. That's not how any of us can live. And, you know, it does tell us in the passage that the workers worked in the heat of the day and that they bore a burden. By the standards of fairness that we understand on earth, where you're rewarded for good and punished for bad, life isn't fair. And that's something that we know and that we have to come to terms with. Jesus doesn't promise us that because we walk with him, we'll be rewarded with freedom from pain, freedom from hardship. Although I'm sure at some point all of us have kind of turned to God and said that this isn't fair, whatever's going on with our lives isn't fair, we don't deserve this, or the person I see suffering doesn't deserve this. But we do have this promise of God's presence with us now and of eternal life, where eventually there'll be nothing in between us and God and no pain and hardship. And we don't deserve that either. You know, we might not feel that we deserve the hardships of life, but we definitely don't deserve the eternal, amazing, perfect life, because we aren't perfect. Jesus doesn't give us what we deserve. He chooses to give us a reward based on what he did instead. And we're going to receive that reward out of love, not out of what we've done. And it will be the same for all of us. every person in this room and beyond who accepts Jesus will receive that same perfect reward in heaven. It's not going to be better for some. It's going to be perfect. Whatever our journey towards Jesus looked like, it ends in the same destination. And whatever our journey towards Jesus looks like, he's next to us on that journey, even if it takes us through really hard stuff. So think on that. Think on the future joy that you have. That is a good thing to remember, that we will be in the perfect space in the future. But also remember that reward that we receive today by being part of Jesus' story.